B-Pod Studios.
Sports Hub Headlines.
Robert Williams blocked a George Niang quarter three at the buzzer, and the Celtics escaped TD Garden with an 88-87 win over Philadelphia last night. Jason Tatum had a big evening for the Green with 26 points and 16 rebounds.
I think at that point in the game, we were just telling ourselves, telling one another, get a stop, get a rebound. Low-scoring game, you know, not shooting great, but you know, figure out a way to win a game. Especially games like this, not the prettiest, but it feels good when you find a way to win a game like this.
Dennis Schroeder added 13 points off the bench. That includes a big layup in the final minute. Celtics are two games over 500 heading out to the West Coast. The five-game trip begins tomorrow night against Utah. Portland's Damian Lillard has been diagnosed with lower abdominal tendinopathy and is out for at least the next 10 days. That also means he won't play against the Celtics on Saturday night. Bruins visit Nashville tonight. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers have the pregame at 7:30 and the face-off at 8 here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. The Patriots have placed safety Kyle Duggar on the COVID list after a positive test. He is questionable for Monday night's game in Buffalo. J.J. Taylor's also on that list. Both players not at practice yesterday. Jamie Collins is back from the IR. He was on the field. The team has also released kicker Quinn Nordine. Major League Baseball and the Players Association met for 7 minutes in Dallas yesterday and left the bargaining table. As a result, the players were locked out at midnight, and the Red Sox just beat the clock yesterday. They traded Hunter Renfro to Milwaukee for Jackie Bradley Jr. and two minor league infielders, and have signed 41-year-old lefty Rich Hill to a one-year contract. Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by IBEW Local 103 and NECA, the power professionals. Power your next project or career with trained electricians and technicians of IBEW Local 103 and NECA. Visit the 103advantage.com. I'm John Wallach at Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update at 6:30.
Brawls come out at night.
Right, forgot about that. Shame on me.
It's Adam Jones on Sports Hub.
Fred, hello!
Hey, guys.
Hello!
Hey.
I don't think you're supposed to be taking walks from the beach.
Ba-do-zap, ba-do-zap.
Opinions is a rectum.
Let's go, Red Sox!
Season four, your mom's a whore. Pizza time.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Wall dick, but yeah.
She made out with my dad.
I have four recliners. He has three.
Hello! Welcome to the show.
Also joining our broadcast team tonight, a man who had a long and distinguished career as a ring judge, over 3,000 fights judged, 132 of those were world championship matches, and Chuck Giampa will join us tonight to give us special insights. And Chuck, tell our viewers a little bit of what you're going to be doing on this broadcast tonight.
Thank you, Al. Tonight I will be taking you inside the mind of a judge. Tonight I'll be taking you inside the mind of a judge. Yeah.
All right, so Chuck will be joining us tonight to add his insights on the judging.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program. We're in the Town Fair Tire Studios. You can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv, or the Twitch app. Give us a call at 617-779-0985. And I'm back. Yesterday had the colonoscopy.
Everything go well?
Yeah, they take a couple things out, but nothing that they think is of much worry. We'll see. But the... I'll tell you, they were much nicer at this place. This place was just colonoscopies are us. This is a. The last time I went was Newton Wellesley Hospital. This was back in 2010, and it's still funny because people are like, "Why the hell did you get a colonoscopy?" Like, even the doctors and nurses were like, "Why did you get a colonoscopy when you were 35?" And I'm like, "My mother was paranoid about all this stuff." And when I went to Newton Wellesley that one time for it, I was like super nervous because you know my issues with the things going in the back door.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, "It's not my fault. You take Ambien and you know." And then I like woke up at the end of it, and they put you in a different kind of sleep. Then this place was very professional, but right before they gave me the propofol, which did knock me out. Apparently, I got up in the middle of it and was like, I'm up, I'm up.
And you don't remember that?
No, no, but I don't remember it. But that propofol is what they gave Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that's the that rang a bell when you said that. And
yeah, that propofol is what they gave Michael Jackson. And the minute that thing hits your bloodstream, like the second that hits your bloodstream, you're just out. It's funny because like at the dentist office when they give you surgery, they're like, "Wow, you were like awake," and I'm like, "Yeah, this is not the same. These are two different things." Like the one at the dentist, they're like keeping you like around the because there's no anesthesiologist there. This propofol, they were like, I'll tell you, it works.
I think that's the stuff that I took that I said that I don't remember.
I don't remember anything,
and it worked instantly.
Yes,
like they put it in my arm, and as I said, they put it in. They're like, "All right, we're gonna put this in. All right, you're done." That was it. Like I don't remember anything.
I don't remember anything either. And they told me that they had to use a lot. They were like, "We had to use a lot," and I'm like, "All right."
So how long did the hangover last? Because I had a decent amount. Like the propofol stuff.
Like propofol, as soon as it stops, you're not supposed to have a hangover from it.
Okay. Well, whatever they used then, there was about an hour or two that, like, put it this way, I don't live very far from where I got it done, and I had told my wife that I could walk home on my own, which is always like, no. Oh, no. Like, I was, like, just, you know, like, it was tough for me. Like, it was Weekend at Bernie's almost getting me home.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I wish that drugs affected me that way. But the right before they put me down, the doctor and the nurses were telling me, and then tomorrow on the show, I'm sure we'll hear all about this. And I'm like, oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
You're about to go up my butt.
Well, it's times like that you don't want them to know who you are.
No, not when your penis is at its very smallest because you're nervous. And not like I'm, you know, packing anything anyway. But I mean, I was almost tempted to say my penis is never this small. Like it's as small as it can get.
Sure.
They were like they're like your blood pressure's high, and I'm like, no kidding. And they're like, yeah, I know. So they were very. This place, it was like a cattle call, though. It was just colonoscopies.
Is what they do.
As far as the eye can see.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a small building, but there was like all these like triage rooms. And then you met with the anesthesiologist and they put a green thing, like you were ready to go, like a green sign. It was like the steakhouse, where the Brazilian steakhouses, where you say, I want more meat.
Sure.
And you just put the green. It was almost exactly like that. They turned the thing from red to green.
Yeah.
The little thing on the bed. And, they knocked me out, and there you go.
So this is almost like a NASCAR pit. As you got in there was everybody who had
no, but I had to wait.
Working.
So, like, they go get there half an hour early, whatever. So I did, and I was in the waiting room for half an hour, which I expected. But then they brought me in at 3, and I didn't get the procedure until 10 to 4. Or 1:30, so 2. I didn't get the procedure until 10 to 3. So for 50 minutes, I didn't have my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So for 50 minutes, I had to sit on the bed and just wait nothing to distract me.
They didn't have a Highlights magazine or anything?
No. By this time, I had the IV in. I was in a robe with, like, nude in a robe underneath a blanket.
Yeah.
And so I just had to sit there and, like, you know, I'm nervous and everything else. And, you know, I'm paranoid the IV is going to come out and I'm not going to know about it because then the propofol won't get in and I'm going to wake up in the middle of it again. And so, but I will tell you that if yesterday is all it is, I would encourage everyone to do it. The things you have to drink now are just two, 6 ounce bottles of stuff. You drink one at 7 o'clock the night before and then one 6 or 8 hours before the procedure.
And they're not disgusting?
How disgusting? I mean,
well,
done shots of like Goldschlager and stuff.
This was 10 times worse. Like for me, it was so bad that I told you.
But it was a gallon. But you had to drink a gallon. These are 6 ounce bottles. So you can drink six. It's two gulps.
Yeah, if it's 6 ounce bottles, and that's doable.
I mean, if anyone drinks alcohol, if you've ever, you know, think about your first beer. It was disgusting. I mean, think about, you know, doing a shot of vodka. I mean, think of all the drinking games.
But I remember this other stuff was almost like when you got like a mouthful of salt water, you know, like if you're like in the ocean.
That, they don't do that anymore.
It was like that tough drink.
I talked to my friend on the way home from here on Tuesday, and he's like, well, you know, what I did is, and I suggest that you do, is that you don't have to take that stuff at all. you just go in early and they give you, what's it called, an enema. And I'm like,
what?
And I'm like, why in the world? I'd rather have diarrhea for 7 days.
Yeah.
He's like, well, it's very comfortable. You just go on your side. And I'm like, no. Like, the whole point is that they knock you out before they stick anything up there. Like, no, I'm not going to get a colonic before I go in there.
Isn't that a complete mind screw, though, when you realize that you don't even remember the stuff that they did, and it's like the most invasive, ridiculous, like up inside your body, like type of work that you're doing.
Dude, you know my theory with that. Knock me out.
Oh,
have your way.
It's great that they do it, but it is weird when you wake up and you're like, how strange is it? I can't even remember that you guys did some, you guys were all up inside of me and stuff, and well, I don't know anything about
it. It's like any, dude, I've had like no, and when I have to have my nose all, and my sinuses all jacked up, I can only hope it's the same, because when I got in that fight and they had to reconstruct my face, not a plastic surgeon, obviously, but when they had to reconstruct all that stuff, like, I was awake during all of it.
Ugh.
Like, they put you, like, they gave you, like, Valium, and it's like...
Yeah, Valium's just, like, it makes you feel, like, a little relaxed.
Yeah, but Valium relaxes you.
It's like, having a couple shots or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're very much awake.
Yeah.
And, so I can only hope this is what they do, but my suggestion is and no one would be more opposed to getting a colonoscopy than me, but if my experience at this place in Wellesley, Endo Boston, Endo whatever the hell it's called, was very, very nice. Everyone was very nice, and I'm saying that because they were such dicks at Newton Wellesley. Like, if I'm a nurse and someone's in there, like, and I wasn't causing problems, like, I was just, like, shaking. Like, I was, like, so nervous about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, calm down. Like, the nurse was like, calm down. And I'm like, what the hell?
And think how much that propofol makes their lives easier, too.
Well, I mean, yeah, you gotta relax.
Well, what a nightmare do you think it is to have somebody who's not quite all the way out and you're trying to do that? Like, can you think of how many times that's probably completely screwed up with everything that they're going to do? Especially someone who already has high anxiety and just and then wakes up and sees that?
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
Well, the anesthesiologist, I told him, I'm like, you know, I woke up during the last time. And he's like, no, not here. He's like, we'll monitor you and just keep giving it to you. And I'm like, all right.
So. They can, like, tell when you're about to come to,
well,
and then they just press the button?
I guess. But yeah. Apparently I got up. Like I said, I got up and I said, I'm up. I don't have any.
And then they went, no, you're not.
Yeah. But they did tell me, and I think it's because I have anxiety, like real bad anxiety. Like I think that they were like, in fairness, though, I was much calmer this time because I'd had it before. Like, I wasn't shaking or anything.
Yeah.
Like, I had it together. Like, I wasn't, like, freaking out. But I think that just the way I am, that, like, my instinct is to, like, fight through it.
Sure.
Because I'll take, like, Ambien sometimes, and it, like, won't even put me to sleep. So, like, I don't know. I just have I don't know. And there's way fatter dudes than me, because I even looked around, and I'm like, there's fat dudes, like, super fat dudes coming out, like, dead asleep. So I'm like, oh, that made me feel better, too. Because I'm like, well, if they could knock them out. Because, you know, it's not like I'm doing drugs or, like, anything like that. So it's not like I have a tolerance.
Yeah.
And so, and it's not like I'm hugely fat. Like, they weighed me. I was 220. So I'm 6'2", 220. There's fatter people. So I don't know what it is, but just there's something about me that I just, during those drugs, I just, like, get up and I'm like, hello.
Well, think about how much that knocked you out, that propofol. And then think about, there was somewhere a doctor who thought it was okay to use that to put someone to bed with Michael Jackson.
Well, the thing is,
like,
if
that's crazy.
If they used that to put you to bed once.
Every night. Like, that was like his bedtime ritual.
And by the way, as soon as they stop administering it, like, you can wake up. Like, so, like, he had to monitor him all night and keep giving him propofol.
Yeah.
So, like, you're never going to sleep again. Like, I can, you know, take naps and everything else. Like, if you, like, once I would imagine you've done a week of using propofol to go to sleep, like, you're never sleeping again.
Do you remember when that audio tape came out of Michael Jackson, who was speaking under the influence of that propofol? It was his doctor talking to him after he'd already given it to him, and it sounded like somebody had played the tape at the wrong speed. He was like,
I don't know. If you get a tolerance to that, where you can even still speak under the influence of that? Like, maybe you can, but like,
well, I mean, I bet that there's, and a lot of these doctors, I have a friend who's an anesthesiologist, said that sometimes they have to bring these guys back up and wake them up slightly in order to do something with one of their procedures. Like, they have to be somewhat aware when they do something, and then they'll put them right back to sleep. And during those times, usually they don't remember that they were awake. And I'm imagining that in that kind of twilight, mid between one sleep and the next, that's where Michael Jackson was on this tape when he was speaking.
So there's three kinds of putting you to sleep, I learned from the anesthesiologist, because he had like a form I had to sign. One is like the dentist, where they put you into like twilight, or I don't.
Well, twilight is when you're aware of what's happening, but you don't feel anything.
I don't want that.
And you can talk your way through things. And
I don't
sometimes
want that
doctors
at all.
Need that.
You're going to put me down, put me down.
So this was the
but
middle.
But sometimes doctors need that.
Oh, I understand. So this was given the choice. Sorry.
This is the middle one.
Okay.
Propofol was the middle one. And then when they have to hook you up to like the
heart surgery.
Yeah, like heart, or probably you, John, they probably had to put you probably had a gas mask on, like a mask on and everything else.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, they probably had to monitor your, you probably, like they had to control your breathing and everything else.
I was an extreme case. I was down for 9 hours.
Well, that's my point, is there's three kinds of it. Mm-hmm. There's one, which is that twilight, which is nonsense. Then there's what they did to me. And then there's when they're really getting in there. And like you got to, and I don't know if they have to control your breathing or what they have to do. But where they're basically like,
you're almost flatlined.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like they're really knocking you out. Like that's where you wake up, and that's the ones where you wake up, and they have to keep you in the hospital overnight, and you're just like, duh.
Yeah.
Now, have you had your first movement yet? Because I remember right after my colonoscopy, it was like apples falling out of a tree. It was smooth sailing. Like, no. I couldn't believe how fast things went.
Well, you know, what they do is, that's good talk. But what they do is at the dentist, you know how they blow air in your mouth?
Yeah.
Well, apparently they do that during the colonoscopy.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, they blow air, like, to, like, see things.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, like, I mean, when you come out, it's like that Kenny versus Spenny where Kenny finds out that he can put the bike pump up his butt.
Right.
And so, like, when you first come out, you're like, oh, boy.
Right.
And I'm like, do I have to go to the bathroom? They're like, no. They're like, you don't have to go to the bathroom. They're like, and I'm like, all right. Well.
You go from being like a 93 at rush hour to being on the Autobahn.
Well, I was, if that's the case, you got to watch what you eat for your first meal back, you know?
Oh, I ate so much. I ate so much.
I was thinking certain kinds of fast food wouldn't sit well with you.
No, I ate so much. Oh, boy, did I eat. All right. Well, there you go. If you're thinking about getting a colonoscopy, if you go to that place, they knock you out. And if they can knock me out, they can knock you up. All right, Rich, what's coming up?
Oh, you wanted big trades? Huge names when it involves the Red Sox. Let's get to a story that broke overnight. A lot of people don't even know about this, but there is a superstar returning home.
And a writer that's BS that's not being covered enough.
Oh, I want to hear about this.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
And that's got to be a soul-killing exercise.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed, it's Toucher and Rich.
What happened last night?
Oh, Rich, wheeling and dealing, because there is a lockout in Major League Baseball. Jeff Passan was on ESPN this morning. He was talking about how he's down in dews, literally talking about down in Mountain Dews.
Down in Mountain Dews.
Like, what are you, 11? But that's how he stays up, is he downs Mountain Dews.
Oh, well.
How's he so thin? I don't understand. But
well, listen, if you were waiting for the Red Sox to make their big splash this offseason, boy, did you go to sleep too early last night.
Because
right about 11:30 p.m., just mere moments before the whole league shut down for the foreseeable future, the Red Sox traded Dinger King Hunter Renfroe to the Brewers for two prospects and Jackie Bradley Jr. That's right, everyone's favorite outfielder coming home.
And if you're saying, what did he hit yesterday?
Well, Fred, if you're saying there's no way that he got worse when he went to Milwaukee, well, I would say you're wrong, because in 2021, Jackie hit a whopping 163, which is 63 for 387.
Well, he must have hit a lot of homers then.
That would be six.
Oh, really?
In 134 games.
In 130. So last season was bad even by Jackie Bradley Jr. standards, which is really tough. Tough to do.
What? Who are these prospects?
Okay, so let's get to that. So here's kind of, because this is what it looks like. It looks like this is a salary dump. They ended up, because it's going to cost, I think, $12 million. You made a great point off the air, John, and I don't mean to speak for you, but you said at least when Jackie Bradley Jr. was here, he was playing that way for not much money. Now you're having him hit 167 for like $12
million. $12 million next year, and I think he has a mutual option for 2023 with an $8 million buyout. So it's essentially $20 million you owe him.
Yeah, so this is what
to
looks
catch
like
the ball in center field.
Pretty much.
He may not even play center field.
Because they already got, like,
Kike Hernandez
like a fourth,
was really
right?
good out there last year.
Where is he going to play?
Right. Where Renfro was.
Well, I mean,
just throws everything off, doesn't it?
Nothing like
Well, I mean, look, the Red Sox, one thing this does is it opens up some options. You can have Durant play center, Bradley play right, and Kike Hernandez play second,
well,
whatever.
I want a weak hitting right fielder.
But this has nothing to do with that. This has everything to do with depth in the farm system again. Adam Ottavino,
who are these people in the
farm? Here's the guy.
System.
So, because as we know, it's not about Jackie Bradley Jr., it's about this prospect. So, David Hamilton, he's the first one. He is the 16th best prospect in Milwaukee's system. He's 24 years
old.
He's
no good. Okay.
He's an 8th round pick in 2019.
All right, so he stinks.
They say that he's reportedly a strong defender and base runner. He'll most likely play second base or shortstop.
All of these guys are double A and lower, by the way.
How old is he?
24.
Oh, okay. And he's double A or lower.
Yes.
Okay, so he stinks.
Okay.
So, and by the way, second base and shortstop are two positions of massive need. All right, go ahead. Because there's no one in the pipeline that can play either of those positions. That's right. Your best prospect's a shortstop. Go ahead.
And the second guy is Alex Pinellas. He is the 17th best prospect in Milwaukee's system. He's a 21-year-old corner infielder drafted in the third round and considered streaky offensively. Now, he did it 309 with 9 homers in 36 games in rookie ball in single-A Carolina.
How old was he?
He's 21. So at least it's not. And matter of fact, it sounds like he's obviously better than David Hamilton. But neither one seems like it's going to completely shake things up.
You bought two more prospects for the farm system is what you did.
Okay, for what end?
There's no sense to this at all.
Because the shortstop and the second base and shortstop prospect is never going to play for you.
Odds are you're right. Neither of these guys are going to be on the major league roster.
There would have to be a catastrophe. Well, I guess if Bogaerts opts out, which I'm sure he will.
After the money that these guys are getting,
he's absolutely going to opt out.
So then you move your top prospect, and he's at short.
Jeter Downs
is at short. So perhaps.
By the way, Jeter Downs hit under 200 at AAA last year.
He's a kid.
I'm just saying he's not ready, is my point.
Well, that's right. And so, okay. This doesn't make a lot of sense.
But here's the other thing that I think doesn't make a ton of sense is that I know that you guys believe that Hunter Renfro played over his average. The guy
wildly
was way
over
out of
his head last year.
Okay, but even if he did, I mean, he's a guy that had 31 homers last year. He had 96 RBI and was a Golden Glove finalist. So think about it this way. Even if you were to cut that down by a third, like you were saying, he was playing 33% over what he should be. That's still a lot better than what you just got back.
It has nothing to do with them. It has nothing to do with Bradley. It has everything to do with the prospects.
But these prospects aren't impressive.
Mayer is your shortstop.
Yes, Mayer. Yeah, Mayer. They're hoping to get in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
but
Mayer.
More to this trade. This trade doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, Chaim Bloom obviously is more about the prospects than Jackie Bradley, who's awful. I mean, Bradley's a better defensive player, but he's the guy who's going to hit ninth for you until he strikes out.
Just nothing jumps
out.
Nothing jumps out at me about these prospects that made this deal worth taking on that salary.
I don't get it. And what this says to me is, and I think I told you this off the air as well, is that the Red Sox and the rest of Major League Baseball think that this last season by Hunter Renfro is an outlier.
and that he's not the player that he just was in this last season. He played so far over his head. And you mentioned he was a Gold Glove finalist. We talked about this during the season. He led the majors, I think, in assists. He had 16. He also had 12 errors, is three more than anybody else in Major League Baseball.
He didn't deserve
to
be a finalist for the Gold Glove. That's for sure. But
well, the Gold Glove, I mean, everyone knows the integrity of that.
Right.
Derek Jeter proved that.
I don't know.
Sure.
Arenado, Edmund, Goldschmidt.
There are guys who deserve it, but there are plenty of guys. Like, I think Yoenis Cespedes was a Gold Glove finalist when he was here, and he was a lot like Renfroe, only he played left. I mean, he had a lot of outfield assists because everyone kept running on him, and he kept kicking balls away in left field.
You don't like Harrison Bader with his curly locks in center field flopping around?
I would not recognize Harrison Bader if he fell on me.
You wouldn't recognize Harrison Bader?
Nope.
Because he's a, like a thick white kid with curly locks that fall below the shoulders.
Can't help you.
Boy, that is an ignorant statement.
Yep.
I mean, because he has a distinctive look.
Now, I know Bader plays for the Cardinals, and I know he's a very good defender. I know
he's a terrible hitter.
But I know he can hit, but I would not recognize him.
So your top prospects are Cassius, who's a first baseman.
Yep.
Mayer, who's a shortstop.
Yep.
York, who's a second baseman.
Yep.
Duran and Downs, who's a shortstop, second baseman.
York is ticketed for AA.
Yes, he's 19. He's a ways away.
He was Heimblum's first ever draft pick.
Yeah, him and May are kids. They're looking. You're looking at a couple seasons from now for them.
Downs was the guy you got in the Mookie Betts trade.
So you got kids to play in your system, just to take up slots in your
system.
It's
depth in the farm system. That's all this was.
Yeah, but
Bradley's 2 years older than Renfroe. Renfroe is a far better offensive player, and both of them were Gold Glove.
But when I'm looking for depth in my system, I'm looking for people who have a shot at playing in the major leagues.
Yes. And you know,
let's for this matter, let's look at the what number prospects were they, Rich?
16 and 17.
16 and 17 in the Milwaukee
16th,
system.
In the Red Sox system is a man by the name of Connor Wong.
He's another one of those guys you got in the Betts trade. He's a catcher.
And your 17th is a Brandon Walter, a left-handed pitcher, who is 25 and is scheduled for late 2023.
Yeah.
Call-up. So he will be, at that point, he will be 27 years old. Which is when all great prospects finally arrive to the majors. Well, I'll tell you this, is Peter Abraham could not be contained on Twitter because the Red Sox page on MLB.com did not have the news of the Bradley deal.
They're not John, were you saying it's because they're not allowed to put anything having to do
wrong
with player
names?
I
misunderstood what Fred was saying. He was saying that the story's just not there, and I think because of the lockout, you're on all teams' pages, you're not allowed to have pictures of baseball players. It's entirely different. I misunderstood.
No, he was saying willful ignorance, like they're not informing the public of this massive deal.
This lockout's going to be hysterical.
By the way, I just re-upped my season tickets for the Red Sox.
Well, good
and
for you.
I look forward to
see you in
JBJ
June,
July,
delighting my son with the star power that's on the field. Now they do play the Cardinals three times, but the. At Fenway, but I am looking forward to, and maybe when Milwaukee comes to town, because they do, I'll get to see Hunter Renfroe.
Wow,
yep,
good stuff.
So
I just can't wait to hear
the tribute video
upon months of these owners who just shelled out a record amount of money for all of these players already in the early off season, crying poor, because that's what you're going to get, and you know what? To be quite honest, I can't wait to ignore all of it. It's just going to get, because you remember how things were even when like the pandemic and just how annoying the back and forth was. You know, if Trevor Bauer hadn't gotten in all that trouble, he would have been chirping off and all that stuff.
Passan is of the mind that this could be done February 1st. He's of the mind that there's plenty of time and that the owner's spending is indicative of this getting done. Because the players' demands aren't that crazy from what I've seen. They want to avoid teams tanking. They want competitive balance.
Yeah, they want a lottery. They want a lottery for the first three rounds of the draft. They want the luxury tax to be raised to $245 million. The owners, it's $206 now.
Yeah, but
the owner's like, no, we only want to put it up to $210.
But if I'm an owner, See, the owners can negotiate this and not raise the luxury tax in my mind. Is that just you would have to insure a floor. So, for instance, if you want to avoid tanking, besides the lottery system shouldn't be a problem. If I'm an owner, yeah, fine, here's the lottery system. And then just establishing a floor so you can't have a Houston situation.
Right.
Where when their payroll was like $30 million, like legitimately like $30 million.
It was for about 4 years in there. That's how they got all, that's how they got Bregman, Altuve, and Correa.
Right. And so if I'm a player, I don't like that. So Scherzer's points of what he once done seem fairly reasonable. This doesn't seem like you're even listen. They the players have seen they're aware of how much the owners are making. They see it's not, I guess, indicative of players' salaries. But it sounds like they're very interested in the middle and lower tiers, Rich, of salaries, that they want those raised. Maybe not so much the Trouts and the Seegers of the world. Well, look out, Texas. That Seeger is something else with his 51 RBI. Go ahead, John.
They have essentially 3 months. To get the season started on time, they pretty much have to resolve this by the first couple of weeks of March.
I have no faith that it's going to be ready.
And you know what? The way they sniped at each other just to get the pandemic season done, and the way they've been sniping at each other the last 4 or 5 days, and you saw press releases from both sides last night. They were already pointing fingers.
Well,
Major League Baseball, real
negotiation.
Quick. I understand that. Major League Baseball, and we've discussed this, has the future in its hands here, because already it's third or fourth and fading fast. The core fan is my age or older. If they do not get a deal done and the season is delayed, it will crush the sport.
There's one other
thing. No one's going to pay attention to it.
I don't know if you heard this story, but yesterday there's one other thing that the players are going to have a little bit of a concern about. Did you hear about the story? I guess Business Insider, of all things, ended up breaking a story that Major League Baseball, without any of the players' or coaches' knowledge, secretly used two different types of baseballs during the season.
I saw that.
And like some of them were like, you know, one of the balls was not as heavy as the other ball. And as you know, the heavier the ball, usually the better of a shot that you'll hit more home runs. And now there's questions as to, well, which games did you choose against which teams? Did you put, you know, have balls that are in there? And you know that during the season, there were a couple pitchers who came out and
what
said
was
that
the reasoning
balls
for that?
So what Major League Baseball is saying, because they admitted it after they were caught.
Yeah.
They admitted that, or what they said was that Rawlings, the company that makes the balls,
sure,
there was a problem. They had to reduce capacity in its manufacturing facility due to COVID. But when they started remaking the balls, the weight was recentered inside the ball, and it ended up coming out a little bit heavier than the ones before it.
Well, that seems like, if you're a multi-billion-dollar industry, something that you might want to figure out is the actual having the balls be consistent.
Or how about make the teams aware of this?
That's one thing. That's fine. But also, I mean,
just in a league where
that's everything. It has to.
It's stats are everything.
Well, and stats. It's the weight of the ball means, I mean, off by a half ounce. I mean, you're asking pitchers. You're asking a lot of these guys.
Don't forget the pitchers had to learn how to pitch, some of them mid-season after they got rid of the hard tack to begin with. I mean, they were messing with the pitchers all season.
It was kind of it doesn't sound like much, but apparently the original balls were 127 grams. And then the newer ones were all the way up to 145 grams.
It matters.
It matters a lot.
It matters everything to them.
And they try to sneak it in there without telling anybody.
Pitching, the people just don't understand that when you get to that level, that everything matters. I mean, think about it this. Scuffing a baseball with an emery board is illegal. Now, think of how minor, like, scuffing a baseball is. The ball reacts differently. The ball, and if I'm a pitcher, I'm BS if it's heavier, because that could mean the difference between my...
Your contract.
My effing elbow staying
maybe
in place.
Maybe you lose a mile or two an hour off your fastball.
Or how about I get Tommy John surgery because now I'm overthrowing, and that's why they don't use, a lot of these guys won't throw weighted balls, whatever.
Anyway. My math isn't great, but that's somewhere between like 15 and 20% of a difference, which is everything.
No, I don't care if it was 1% of a difference, it's a lot.
But the main thing is that the players are looking at this and going, Why didn't you tell us this?
That's unfathomable. They couldn't get it together to figure out a uniform weight of a baseball. That's everything. Maybe the mound in Tampa was weird.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus, if you would have told me they screwed up the weight of the baseball, no, that means everything. Any little thing when it comes to pitching means a ton. It does. I mean, you're talking about the way the ball moves, like fractions of inches. The difference between hitting something on the barrel or popping or hitting a mid range fly ball is what? A half an inch?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
if a heavier baseball, you ordinarily throw 96, 97. The fastball comes in there at 94. That's all the difference in the world for the hitter to get the bat around and barrel up a fastball.
If I got Tommy John, I'm suing the league. I mean, you weighted the baseball and I blew out the tendon in my elbow. Anyway, I have faith that they're going to, I think there's going to be a season.
I hope you're right.
I think I am right.
I hope you are.
It's going to start a month late. That's my prediction. Everything's going to get moved back a month.
They can't, but all the sniping back and forth leading up to that is going to turn people off again.
I don't think so.
Think they care?
I think you're not worried. They're not worried about Fred and I. They're worried about bringing in casual fans. And the last thing a casual fan of this sport wants to see is millionaires and billionaires fighting over money.
But I just think it's funny that he says it's the third or fourth. It's second. Maybe not in national ratings, but in the amount of money they bring in. I mean, there's swaths of this country that don't care about the NBA. I mean, baseball is pretty uniformly loved. They make a ton of money. A ton of money.
Mm-hmm. They do.
So, I mean, I'm not worried about that. All right. Well, I think they'll play. I really do. I have every confidence.
They got 3 months.
And I think that's enough time. And I think what the players are asking for is very reasonable. And I think the owners stand to lose a lot more by not giving in. All right. By not giving in. All right. We'll be right back. Hey, did you guys talk about the super cool quarterback of the Patriots and his sweet copyright?
That was not out yet yesterday morning. We'll talk about that also. There was a great win by the Celtics last night, even though the Sixers aren't great.
Super cool Mackie J.
Uh-huh.
You still like him?
Oh, sure.
You still like him after that?
He's a dreamboat.
What an unoriginal prick. All right. It's going to be like beef jerky.
Everyone's going to get that tattooed on their deltoid, man.
Beef jerky and dip.
Dude, if JE11 worked.
But it didn't?
Yeah, but why?
Yes.
No, but why would you just not? Why wouldn't you just call it something else? Someone suggested Mac 10.
That's not a bet. I like that better, actually.
I bet that's already licensed. It's got to be.
Probably. All right, we'll be back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Talking about the game is no game.
You were listening. You were enjoying the talk.
Toucher and Rich.
That's wordplay, my friends.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey. We're the Toucher and Rich radio program. Rich, the Celtics played last evening.
Yeah, and they clamped down defensively and took down Doc Rivers in the process.
Niang floats it to the top of the circle. Tobias Harris, guarded by Horford, down to 4 seconds. Horford puts the body on it. Harris turning, floats it into the corner. Shot is in the air, blocked, and the Celtics have won the ballgame. They could never get it near Joel Embiid.
Wow. Was that Al Horford that came up with
it? A brilliant performance by Al Horford from start to finish against his former team. And the Celtics score 88 and win.
A walk-off three-pointer to win the game is old and cliche, but a walk-off block to win the game, now we're talking. That was awesome. Rob Williams got a finger on the last-second attempt for the Sixers to steal one, and they ended up falling short. 88-87, the final score. It was great. Both Rob Williams and a extra motivated Al Horford were excellent defensively last night. That play right there, the final one, You could tell they were trying to get at Joel Embiid, but Horford was all over him. And there are parts of the night as well where Jaylen Brown, despite even hurting, like had him on lockdown.
And that's something to mention here because we're going to go right past it. Jaylen Brown's still not right.
No.
He's still not even close to right.
He's hurting pretty badly.
Yeah.
And you could tell last night. But, I mean, thanks to a full team effort, Joel Embiid, well, I mean, he made almost about as many buckets as Ben Simmons last night. He only made three shots, I think, out of his attempted 17.
Celtics doubled him with both bigs last night. They had Rob Williams and Al Horford double him in the low post, and that's not something he sees all that often, and it threw him off. He wasn't making shots. His normal fall-away jumpers and threes, he did not play well last night.
I saw a Grandy stat last night. That is only the third time in his career that he failed to shoot 20% from the floor. You know, the other times at the TD Garden against the Celtics. So Jason Tatum, he continues to try and change the narrative about how he's been playing, but he continues to, over the last couple of games, set highs in ways other than scoring.
Shovel pass to Horford straight away. Now the ball swung to Tatum. Slot drive on the right side. He pulls up at 19 feet. Tough shot is good by Tatum.
He taps the referee on the booty being like, he went under my leg.
So not only did good shooting Tatum show up last night with 26 points, but he set a personal record for rebounds last night with 16. This is the same week that he set a personal record for assists. So after being called selfish in the press this week, we talked to Mike Gorman about that. Jason Tatum yesterday at his postgame tried to change that narrative.
I seen a report the other day that said I was a selfish player. That seems pretty unselfish of me. You know, whatever it takes for us to win. You know, I guess more often than not, it's going to be in my hands. But we play 82-some games in regular season. And there's going to be certain nights where you might need to space the floor, take the best defender away out the action, and see what we get.
Now, I'm not going to criticize Jason Tatum. I've told you I like that he's finding other ways to contribute when he goes cold shooting. But it is kind of funny hearing him peacock about being unselfish on a night that he had two assists. So I don't know if that's quite the night to do it.
I think it's great. He just said, yeah, I read that.
Yeah.
A guy called me unselfish. Well, F you.
Good. If that motivates him, I'm telling you, you know, it would be easy to crush Jason Tatum for that poor shooting streak that he went through. But during that time, at least he was playing his ass off trying to contribute in some other way. And you've seen it with the rebounds, you've seen it with his defense, and you know, last night you know with the rebounds, you saw with the assists the night before. But as far as Horford, I mean, you could tell he absolutely was playing with some extra juice yesterday. He had a chance to, I guess in his mind, get back at a team that had essentially, after they paid him, of course, left him for dead. Here's what he had to say afterwards.
Obviously, it's everything on me. You know, it was my decision to leave, you know, do all these things. And it was like, how are you going to respond, you know, after you've been faced with adversity, being down, being talked down about it? It's a reality. You know, you have to put results, you have to do certain things. And I didn't do that. And yeah, I'm sure, you know, I was written off. And I'm just glad that I got another opportunity in a place where I want to be.
The one thing about Al Horford that as a Celtics fan you have to feel pretty good about is not just he's been consistently good all season long, but when you take a look and realize the fact that you basically flipped him for Kemba Walker, and now you see that Kemba Walker's not even in the rotation right now in New York, you know, you kind of got away with one there. That is almost like that's very Danny Ainge-esque almost, even though that was a Brad Stevens move. It has his fingerprints all over it. Somewhat of a heist.
You have to hope that Al, and Mike Gorman said this yesterday, you have to hope that Al holds up. He's 35. Remember, his knee was a problem back when he was here the first time, and that was the reason the Celtics wouldn't give him the contract that, oddly enough, they're now paying him. Al Horford played, he only, I think, had 10 points and 8 rebounds last night, but defensively, he was great on Joel Embiid, and he's needed for this team to try and grab home court in the first round of the playoffs. That I think is the ceiling for this team. I hope he holds up. He's 35, so that is always a danger.
So, Fred, this is going to be interesting. So the Celtics hit the road for what normally would be a fairly intimidating stretch, but fortunately, it's riddled with injuries and missing players all over the place. You've got the Jazz tomorrow night. And then it goes the Blazers, who I heard during your headlines, Lillard's not going to be with them for a while.
Correct. Tickets to these games, not not the best news for you.
No, well, I mean, these are all, once again, you know, out west on the on
oh,
this trip.
Oh, I thought some of them.
And, 5-game West Coast road trip.
Yeah, and the Lakers most likely without LeBron. He's because he's on the COVID thing for 10 days, and then the Clippers, and then unfortunately they're going to get their asses kicked by the Suns because they just look almost unbeatable.
However, they may not have Devin Booker. I mean, the Phoenix, he left a couple of nights ago with a hamstring injury, and the word is that Phoenix is going to be cautious with him this early in the season, and he's going to miss, quote, a few games, unquote. Well, the Celtics play Phoenix in 4 games from now on Phoenix's schedule, so it is possible they will not have Devin Booker. Now, even without Booker, Phoenix should still win that game, but still, you won't have to face one of their best players.
They're just, like, insane defensively, too.
Yes.
I mean, I think they were the first team to hold Golden State under 100 points since, is it the beginning of the season?
Yes.
Yeah, they're just...
No, Phoenix is very, very good, and that goes largely unnoticed. Golden State's an excellent defensive team, too, and that goes largely unnoticed.
All right, the Bankroll Boys should be here. We will talk to them about everything coming up this week in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.